Today is Tuesday, May 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Russia's president is officially sworn in for another six-year term. President Trump and his attorney ramping up efforts to discredit the Russia investigation. The First Lady announcing her official platform.
I feel strongly that as adults, we can and should be best at educating our children about the importance of a healthy and balanced life.
Also had some of the biggest summer blockbuster movies. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump claimed Monday the investigation into links between the 2016 campaign and Russia is rapidly losing credibility. In four Twitter comments, Trump belittled Special Counsel Robert Mueller's year-long criminal investigation into Moscow's meddling in the election and whether he obstructed justice by trying to thwart the probe a year ago when he fired FBI Director James Comey, who was leading the investigation before Mueller was named to take it over. And it comes at a time when his new attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has been on a media blitz. Joining us now is attorney and former agent with the Central Intelligence Agency, Jack Rice. What do you make of all of this?
Rudy Giuliani is a bomb thrower. It's what he does. It's what he has always been. The problem is he seems to be running a PR campaign rather than running the president's defense of an investigation. And he needs to determine what it is that he's doing. He says he's doing one. He's really doing the other.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Pretty simply, the problem that Rudy Giuliani has to address here is trying to shut down the investigation as best he can. He seems to be going on every talk show to try to convince his base to drive this to settle, to try to convince the Republican Party to shut this down as best he can, rather than trying to reach out to those in the middle and those even, dare I say it, on the left to realize that there's nothing here. He has not done that. But most importantly, what he could do is he could very quietly, very carefully address the issues that need to be addressed as lead counsel with Mueller's office, not in front of Fox News, not in front of CNN, not in front of the New York Times, but sitting down in Mueller's office saying, let's talk about the parameters of what we're willing to do, how we narrow those down to a very specific set of questions, if we can, and we're going to get the president in, and we're going to get the president out, and we're not going to have him on the front page of the paper every single day on this investigation. Rudy Giuliani, since he has stepped into this role, has put this story front and center every single day with a new revelation. That does not serve his president well.
And what about the whole issue of if the president decides not to talk voluntarily? Apparently, the special counsel has said he would consider subpoenaing him. Giuliani is saying, A, that the president might plead the Fifth, meaning will not speak. That's his Fifth Amendment right. Or he says he's not obligated to go under a subpoena because he's a president.
When it comes to the subpoena power, the case law is very specific on this issue. It's called Clinton v. Jones. It was a case that came down specifically involving President Clinton and his behavior prior to the presidency and whether or not you can actually subpoena a sitting president regarding those issues. And the answer is you can. So that issue specifically applies to this instance. The president or Rudy Giuliani could say that he doesn't have an obligation to respond. The problem is he does. This may be great if you're going to throw meat to the base, but this is not going to work in a court of law. Again, this comes back to the question, is Rudy Giuliani addressing these issues as lead counsel, or is he doing it as part of the PR campaign for the base? He has to decide what he is because he's schizophrenic otherwise.
It certainly, though, seems like between the two of them, President Trump and Rudy Giuliani, that they are on a mission to discredit Mueller and his team and the entire Russia investigation, that it, again, is a witch hunt, coming up with new tactics to sort of try to make that case, at least to their base. Is this all sort of seeming like it's in preparation to try to undermine the investigation and potentially fire Mueller?
Yes. I mean, that is my biggest fear here, is that what this is real about is about undermining the investigation and giving the Republicans in the House justification to ignore the president's firing of Robert Mueller. That is the fear in this case. But the problem is that if you're looking to create a constitutional crisis, firing the special investigators, firing this special counsel could do exactly that.
And then what?
The problem is we have never been in this place before. This is right where President Nixon was, this idea of deciding that Richard Nixon was above the law. This was the debate that was going on in the Oval Office then, and President Nixon tried to make the argument that he was above the law. Sadly, what's going on here is that President Trump, through Rudy Giuliani, is trying to make the very same argument. I'm a sitting president. I have no obligation to respond to a subpoena. I have no obligation to do anything about this at all. And instead, to continue to argue that these are a bunch of Democrats, despite the fact that Robert Mueller is a Republican, despite the fact that a whole series of these investigators are Republicans. But frankly, it's astounding to me because that isn't a litmus test anyway. The real question is, are these investigators being fair? Are they being objective? Are they trying to dig into the answer? If you note, Rudy Giuliani isn't arguing about that question. He's not talking about the actual weight of the investigation or the 19 indictments that are already taken place or the three who have already pled guilty or the ongoing investigation that's acquiring more and more and more evidence. He's not talking about that. What he's talking about right now is why Bob Mueller's team are Democrats, because my fear is that it's about providing cover to allow this president to do something that I would argue is unthinkable, and that's firing Bob Mueller.
All right, that's attorney and former CIA agent Jack Rice. President Trump says he will announce later today whether he'll pull out of the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal with Iran and reimpose sanctions. Trump has frequently complained about the 2015 agreement to ease sanctions against Iran in exchange for curbs of its nuclear program, calling it a disaster. Trump has been under pressure from both sides, including European leaders who want the U.S. to stay in, and Israel, which accuses Iran of blatant lying and cheating. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson was in Washington Monday lobbying top Trump administration officials to stay in the pact. Johnson says there are things that can be done to fix the deal rather than withdrawing from it.
The core of it, they will want to keep. But what we can do is be tougher on them in other respects and try to address that key question of what happens when the deal expires. And that's where, actually, to be fair, I think the President of the United States has a valid point. And we need to address that with our European friends and with other partners.
But as for the problems that do need to be addressed,
to try to stop Iran getting missiles, stop them interfering in neighboring countries, and also to fix the core problem of the deal, which is that it expires in 2025, and then there's no way of stopping the Iranians going very rapidly to get a nuclear weapon.
French President Emmanuel Macron was at the White House 2 weeks ago saying he knows the deal with Iran isn't perfect, but said there's no plan B. Iran has insisted it hasn't violated the agreement and has refused to renegotiate the pact. President Hassan Rouhani Monday said his government could remain in the agreement with the remaining signatories. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Hawaii's Kilauea volcano is spewing lava into residential neighborhoods. Nigeria's military says it's helped rescue over 1,000 Boko Haram victims. The U.S. cements plans to separate families crossing the border illegally. Turkish court rules the U.S. pastor will remain in jail, stoking U.S.-Turkish tensions. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Sixteen months after her husband was elected president of the United States, Melania Trump has announced her first official initiative as First Lady. She talked about it in a speech in the White House Rose Garden.
I'm very excited to announce Be Best, an awareness campaign dedicated to the most valuable and fragile among us, our children. Let us teach children the importance of all aspects of their well-being, which includes a social, emotional, and physical health. As we all know, social media can be both positively and negatively affect on our children, but too often it used in negative ways.
As First Lady, she says she'll focus on an array of projects ranging from programs that assist babies exposed to opioids to efforts that help protect children on the internet. The initiatives, as she described them, were designed to lift up and empower children. Russian President Vladimir Putin was sworn in for a fourth six-year term Monday at the Grand Kremlin Palace's ornately decorated hall. With his hand on a gold embossed copy of the Constitution, Putin swore to serve the Russian people, and then he gave the inaugural address. Reporter Charles Maines in Moscow talked about it with Sarah Williams.
This year's ceremony, this is, of course, Mr. Putin's fourth term in office, so we've seen these inaugurations before. This year's ceremony really stood in stark contrast to 2012, the last time we saw this, where critics really mocked him over this decision to clear Moscow's street for the arrival of Putin's motorcade. So you had these really kind of eerie televised image of Putin and his bodyguards alone in the streets of the capital. It really just kind of emphasized how out of touch the Russian president was with the public. Instead, this year, you know, the television cut away to the Russian leader diligently working at his desk with his jacket off when the call came notifying him that it was time to take the oath of office. And so you have this kind of image of Putin walking, you know, putting on his coat, walking in down and making his way to the ceremony, and very much just trying to kind of make it look a little bit more modest this time. But of course, once inside the Kremlin, it's all gold and pageantry.
Well, and one thing also struck me, they showed him walking down this long hallway and down the steps. I think, again, it's to show that he's even though he's in his mid-60s, he's in good shape.
That's right. It is a long walk. It's kind of eternal camera shot as he makes his way down the hall. And then there was another surprise for viewers here, which is that the commentators noted that the president had issued his standard Mercedes vehicle for a new Russian-built limousine, and that would serve as the official Kremlin vehicle. And it's very much a sign of the times that Russia's kind of turning away from the West and focusing inward.
The inauguration follows, however, there were protests over the weekend, and Russia's best-known opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, was arrested and then released by authorities.
That's right. I was at that rally in Moscow. There are, of course, dozens of rallies across the country. These were called by Alexei Navalny to protest what he says is Putin's authoritarian rule. They call it, he is not a czar to us, a reference to this idea that Putin is some kind of emperor here in Russia. It was a really interesting scene there because at least in Moscow, from where I was, we saw mass arrests, 700 detained in Moscow alone, 1,600 across the country. But mostly it was interesting to see just how the policing was taking place. It was very aggressive policing, protesters beat up. They also included the use of whip-wielding Cossacks. These are sort of traditional Russian guardsmen attacking peaceful protesters with whips. You know, all this seemed to kind of underscore this chasm between the free society that the Russian leader said he wants to see in his speech today and, you know, the autocratic system that his critics say that Mr. Putin has constructed over his 18 years in power.
Putin has been leader of the country. He's been either president or prime minister since 1999. Looking forward, does it seem to be that, is there any successor in sight?
Well, that's one of the other big questions. It started almost the day after his election. You know, he so dominated the political scene here. As you noted, he stepped down to prime minister role for 4 years while Dmitry Medvedev was in charge of the country. But really, Mr. Putin ran the whole Kremlin behind the scenes. So he's really dominated political life here for 18 years, and there is nobody else. And they've made it that way specifically so no one can challenge him. Even Mr. Navalny, who tried to participate in these presidential elections last March, was banned from doing so, in part because he's a dangerous candidate for the Kremlin. He's much younger than Mr. Putin. He's certainly connected with younger Russians. But going forward, I think there is a lot of interest in terms of who gets promoted in the Kremlin ranks to see if there's some plan in place, because as of right now, there isn't one.
That's Charles Maines reporting from Moscow. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
On the next edition of VOA's Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel goes to Capitol Hill to talk with Congressman Brad Schneider, a Democrat from Illinois. They'll discuss a wide range of domestic and foreign policy issues facing the Trump administration, such as this week's visit by French President Emmanuel Macron, as well as Iran, North Korea, and trade policies. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is Russ Davis. Join me as I take you to the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. for the induction of Joanne Brackeen, Diane Reeves, and Pat Metheny into the hallowed hall of NEA Jazz Masters. the 2018 NEA Jazz Masters on the next Jazz America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Oliver North, a controversial retired Marine and former Reagan White House aide, has been named as the next president of the National Rifle Association. He was a staff member of the National Security Council in 1989 when he was convicted on three charges after taking partial responsibility in a scheme to sell weapons to Iran, which was subject to an arms embargo. Well, Friday, the NRA convention was held in Dallas, Texas, where hundreds of gun enthusiasts came to hear President Trump and others speak. But outside the event, activists and shooting survivors gathered to protest the huge influence of the NRA in American politics. It has been the subject of intensifying protests and public pressure since a mass shooting February 14th at Parkland, Florida high school that killed 17 people. Joining us now is actress, activist, and founder of No RA, Alyssa Milano.
I think we really just want to continue to shine a light on the power and influence that the NRA has over our political system and our politicians. And with the midterm coming up, I think that's a really important message. I think that this will be a single-purpose election for many people, and I think that they will be voting against those that have taken money from the NRA or that are supported from the NRA. And I think that once the NRA has lost a stronghold over our government and our political system, we'll be able to implement some policy change that will keep the country safer.
This event on Friday, the president spoke at the National Rifle Association convention. As you all were outside, you and hundreds of gun safety activists protesting, and of course survivors as well. My understanding is that the NRA convention set an attendance record. Does that concern you?
I don't know, to be honest with you, how much of what the NRA is saying is actually truthful. So when they say that they set an attendance record, I wonder if it's the same way Donald Trump says that he set attendance records by his inauguration. So I'm not completely convinced that the numbers that they're giving us, I'm not too sure that those are all real numbers.
You know, they had their big convention, and outside there was another very big event that you all put on. Paint us a picture of what was happening, what the message was. Just give us a recap of the other event.
The NOLA event, we brought together activists, artists, and gun survivors to tell their story, to give people of Dallas an alternative to what was happening in their city. We had a really nice turnout. It was a powerful experience, especially because we had speakers kind of all spectrums of gun violence. It was really an empowering experience because there were children there, there were people of all ages, and you could really feel, of all the marches, because believe me, we have marched a lot in the last year, haven't we? This one felt the most desperate to me, and I think because of the heartache that gun violence, and even the fear of gun violence invoked, it felt the most, that we had the most. So it was very emotional. It was emotional for everyone. But really to see it, and to see it in a place like Texas, which is an open carry state, to drive around and see people with their AR-15 flung across their back, see the footage come out of the convention that was so celebratory about these weapons and the weapons that, these new weapons that are coming out, weapon that disguises itself as a cell phone. There was a real joy from gun enthusiasts about those things. That's the hardest thing for me, was to see that, but also I'm glad I did see that because I have a better understanding of what we're really up against.
And how are the students doing? Are they still just as fired up as they were when the tragedy occurred?
I think so, yeah. I was with the parents this weekend, Manny and Fred, and I think they're doing outstanding work. They're doing the best work they possibly can be doing, considering they're still all grieving. I don't think we can ever lose sight of that. And I think as activists and gun movement. We have to lift them up. We have to support them. They can't feel like they're doing this by themselves, and they shouldn't feel like they're doing it by themselves, even though they're making the most impact right now. So they're doing well. They're fired up. They are using this energy of trauma. And by the way, this is not easy for them, because every time they fight, every time they get out there and speak on these issues, they are reopening the wounds. So what they're really doing is an act of selflessness to try to better the country. This is not easy for these kids. It's not easy for these families. And it's not easy for the siblings. I don't think we can take anything away from that. I have no doubt it's definitely not going to be the last tragedy like this. And that's the saddest part of all of it, is even if we stop talking about this particular fight right now, we'll be reminded of the fight after the next tragedy.
All right. That is actress, activist, and founder of No RA, Alyssa Milano. Thanks for being with us. When it comes to blockbusters, bigger and bolder is Hollywood's focus for this summer as the studios count on new and improved sequels to make up for last year's lackluster box office season. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
The end is near.
Avengers: Infinity War has blown past its $630 million record opening, the biggest ever, by creating a new formula, the largest ever pantheon of superheroes, including Black Panther, sharing the 2.5-hour screen time, explosive special effects in outer space, and an unpredictable ending.
I hope they remember you.
Nobody's ever done anything like this before. You're taking this many disparate franchises, really successful franchises, and combining them all into one movie, into one big finale.
The film cost $320 million to make, but within a couple of weeks, the Disney Marvel studio has way more than recouped its expenses. The film's departure from formulaic scripting may also signal a change towards more imaginative extravaganzas than in summers past.
Dr. Carr! 2016's
darkly satirical comic book movie Deadpool was such a success, grossing almost $700 million more than it cost to make, that 20th Century Fox produced a sequel.
It's showtime.
Don't call it a comeback! I've been here for years!
Fans hope that Deadpool 2 will keep its off-the-grid deadpan mojo and deliver as original a plot as its predecessor. Walt Disney and Lucasfilm Studios are hoping to recoup the production cost of the sci-fi film Solo, a Star Wars story. Oscar-winning filmmaker Ron Howard took over the director's chair from the original directors, who left over creative differences with the studios, and reshot 80% of the film. Howard's uncompromising quality standards, which pushed production costs over $250 million, have hyped the film about the early years of Star Wars hero Han Solo and his co-pilot Chewbacca.
Welcome to Jurassic World.
Bigger and scarier also describes Universal's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. This time around, the dinosaur fleet is accompanied by an environmental message with humans saving the big lizards from extinction.
In 3.5 weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball. And we are going to rob it. Not the ball itself,
on the neck of Daphne Kluger.
The heist comedy film, Ocean's 8, features diamonds, glamour, daring, and a dynamic cast, helmed by Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, and Anne Hathaway. Warner Brothers Studios expects the film, an all-female spin off of Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's trilogy, will attract strong female audiences. Yes. And if none of this satisfies summer blockbuster fans, the latest installment of Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible franchise, Mission Impossible Fallout, should, as moviegoers come to watch how the megastar tops his previous stunts. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA, that does it for today's International Edition. But join us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Glenn Hollis. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At least 16 people were killed in an attack on May 1st on Notre Dame of Fatima, a Roman Catholic church in the Central African Republic capital, Bangui. The attack was committed by a criminal group known as FORCE that operates out of the predominantly Muslim neighborhood PK5 in the capital. The church's abbot, the Reverend Tungu Male Mbaba, was among the dead. Angry mobs subsequently attacked a mosque in the Bangui suburb of Lakunha. The United States Embassy to the Central African Republic issued a statement expressing horror and sadness concerning the senseless attack against the church in Fatima and the subsequent revenge attack against the mosque in Lakunha. We mourn the deaths that occurred, as well as the injuries that resulted from this criminal act, the U.S. Embassy noted. We extend our deepest condolences to the families. The individuals who carried out this act are cowards. They represent neither Muslims nor Christians. They do not represent Central Africans. They only seek to provoke a bloody response. The United States urges all citizens of the Central African Republic not to fall into the trap of violence and revenge. This must stop. The United States condemns these acts without reservation, and we stand with all Central Africans who stand for peace. The U.S. truly understands the deep anger that people feel at this moment, but we implore all citizens to renounce violence and return home tonight to avoid further bloodshed. This cycle must stop for the sake of the country's children and all of its people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.